Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you today from an early morning in Vancouver as the temperature has somehow dropped yet again. And I'll be speaking with a colleague in Brazil today, so presume with much warmer temperature than we're experiencing here. Licia Ribeiro, who's from Unifenas Medical School in Belo Horizonte. And the paper we'll be discussing is titled Effective Reflection on Medical Students' Situational Interest, an experimental study that can be found in the May 2018 issue of Medical Education. Licia, I understand that you're suffering from a bit of a cold. I'm sorry to hear that, but thankfully you have the energy to talk today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about research.
Yeah, it's exciting research. I'm glad we have the opportunity and trust that you'll let me know if your energy starts to wane, but we'll keep things brief as usual with these things. Part of the reason I wanted to talk to you about this particular paper is there's been a lot of discussion, as most of our listeners will know, about reflection and its role in medical training and medical practice. We have a When I Say series in the journal that allows people to offer their views on the definitions of terms that are used variably. And this seems like one of those terms that I need to start off by asking you, what does reflection mean in your context?
Yes, well, I think that's really worthy to set the boundaries of the limits when we are talking about reflection, because it's such a broad and complex concept. And specifically in this research, we're talking about reflection about clinical reasoning strategy, a process of confronting one's diagnostic hypothesis with clinical data and arguing not only for, but also against it. And this way, looking at the clinical problem from different perspectives.
And is there a reason that you've been focusing on reflection as a mechanism through which to try to improve clinical reasoning?
Yes, this is a part of a project that is focusing on clinical reasoning process. There are many other educational opportunities that reflection process can bring, can open. We decided to focus on this, so to speak, more pragmatic strategy, and there is related to the important competence for medical doctors. There is the clinical reasoning process and the process of coming up to the most likely diagnostic hypothesis for a patient.
And so reflection in your hands then is really about prompting a very deliberate, systematic way of thinking through a case. Your colleagues Sylvia Mamidi and Hank Schmidt have been involved in a number of studies like this. For the sake of our listeners who aren't familiar with those, what is the instruction that you give to people to try to induce them to be more reflective?
Well, we asked the participants of the study to analyze clinical data. These clinical data were presented in written clinical cases consisting of history, data, a medical examination, a physical examination findings, and also laboratory findings. And we asked them to write the most likely diagnostic hypothesis for them, the first diagnosis after they made the initial assessment of the clinical data. After that, we asked them to write findings that match this first hypothesis, findings that contradict it, and also we asked them to write findings that were expected, where these particular diagnoses were correct, but there is not present in the report. After that, we asked them to write two alternative diagnoses and run the same process before they make a conclusion, which would finally be their final diagnosis, so the first hypothesis.
And so these are directed questions, but they're things that somebody can work themselves through. And you know, in terms of your comment that it's a very pragmatic approach, you didn't have to be sitting with them giving feedback or correcting them at any step of the way. It was just really giving them a process through which to work through the case. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. They didn't have any feedback while they were working with the cases. It was a process they ran on their own.
And the work that I've seen like this before is primarily focused on whether or not it was a mechanism for actually improving diagnostic accuracy. In this project, you expanded things to look at whether or not it had a motivational influence, could get people more interested in the diagnostic process. So why did you think that might be an outcome that would be stimulated by going through this sort of reflection?
Well, first, we thought it was important to look at motivational factors because, as you said, we have some evidence that it may help students to develop their diagnostic accuracy through reorganization of knowledge. But in order to become an expert, someone also has to expand knowledge. So we focus our attention on this motivational aspect. And from literature, from curiosity and interest, we know we have some evidence that a challenging uncertainty, which seem to be the triggers of reflection, are also potential triggers for interest. So we found it would be reasonable to assume that a reflection process like this probably increase or foster students' interest in a certain case or in a certain topic.
So having said that, and given that we're having a conversation about this, people can probably anticipate the result. But before we get to that, this was an experimental study, as I alluded to earlier, which obviously indicates that you had a control group. How did you try to set things up where you could determine whether or not there was a causal influence of this sort of reflection? What did the control group have to do?
Well, the control group worked with the same clinical phases, but instead of using the structured reflection procedure, they were asked to write the most likely and two alternative diagnoses, and that was the test related to the case. Afterwards, they worked in a crossword so that we can guarantee that both groups were for the same amount of time on each test. So it was a structured reflection versus the differential diagnosis approach.
And situational interest was measured by asking them about the extent to which they were interested in the task. What did you find in terms of the results that were most interesting to you?
Well, we used a questionnaire that was validated previously, and with questions such as, I enjoyed working on the case, I thought this case was interesting. So it was a four-item instrument with the Likert scale, through which we measured the situational interest of all participants. And as we expected, our main finding was along with what we had foreseen. The students who worked through reflection showed higher situational interest scores than those the control group.
Did that increased situational interest interact with the type of cases or their difficulty in any way, or was it primarily seemingly driven by the prompt to work through this reflective sequence?
Well, the scores were higher for all the cases, so to speak. We worked with two levels of difficulty cases. Half of them were easy cases for this specific audience, and half of them we assumed would be difficult cases for them. And reflection indeed fostered higher scores of situational interest when they worked with both levels of difficulty. And the unexpected and perhaps most interesting finding for us, maybe because it gave us a lot of thought, is that there was an unpredicted interaction. We thought students would be more interested when they worked with the complex cases because it would be more challenging to them. And we have some theory and evidence that interest, thirst for knowledge, would be dependable on the perception of one's knowledge gap. And students actually showed higher situational interest scores when they worked with the easy cases.
Yeah, that one's a bit tricky to understand. I would anticipate that there will be some optimal degree of difficulty, that if it were too easy, they would lose interest, and if it were too difficult, they would lose interest. So perhaps your easy cases were right in that sweet spot in the middle.
Yes, probably. We think that the difficult cases were too difficult for the specific audience. Maybe they thought it was beyond their reach, so it might have inhibited their interest.
Yeah, so there's obviously more to be understood, but it seems like in this instance there's fairly clear implications in terms of the potential to use this sort of reflective prompt to try to increase interest and hopefully motivation for practicing with cases like this. Are there any things that you would want our listeners to take away as a key message in terms of what they could try based on your research?
Well, Well, I think it's possible too for clinical teachers. This process, I describe it, is easier to do than to describe. So it's a short time consuming, it's not a complex procedure. And it might help clinical teachers to foster their students' interest in certain cases or in certain topics. But it also, I think, it brings something for clinical teachers to think when it comes to this level of complexity, or in this case, specifically clinical reasoning complexity. Because no matter the level of expertise of our students, in the real scenario, in the real setting, the patients with different levels of complexity or skill will show up. And perhaps trying to master the clinical reasoning skills of students when they're dealing with too complex cases might not be the best way to go. There could be some other good learning opportunities in a clinical encounter than that.
And for my final question then, what remains the biggest source of uncertainty for you with respect to using this as a teaching exercise? Are there things that you wish you knew now that might be the focus of research questions for you in the near future?
Well, one of them, there is, I think it's clear, is that we didn't measure students' engagement in learning activities. Although we can pretty much rely on interest to foster engagement, to help students engage and persist in learning activities, we cannot say that from this experiment. And this is what we are pursuing right now. And the other thing that remains an open question and we think that is worth to pursue is the role of awareness of one's knowledge gaps when it comes to situational interest. Because we have conflicting findings, it's necessary for one to be consciously aware of their knowledge gaps in order to get interested in a certain topic, or are these independent feelings, so that's dependent on the context we work with. So I think these are the two major questions we came out with this study and that we are trying to figure out in our next step.
Wonderful, thank you. I wish you the best of luck with that. And again, you mentioned that the pragmatic details in terms of how to actually implement this are fairly straightforward, and so I'll direct our listeners to the paper for those details if they want to give this a try in their own context. And just as a reminder, you'll find that in the May 2018 issue of Medical Education, and it's titled Effective Reflection on Medical Student Situational Interest, an Experimental Study, and the voice you've been hearing is Ligia Ribeiro, who is the first author on this manuscript. Thanks again, Ligia, and I wish you the best of luck with a quick recovery.
Okay, thank you very much.